Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritis. Thank you so much for joining me today. It is March 12th, 2019. I hope everyone is doing well. Let's get into some of the economic news today, starting with the stock markets. We have the S&P up 8 points, the Dow down 96, the NASDAQ was up 33, and the Russell was able to eke out a $1 gain for the day. Oil, still above $57. Gold is now back above $1,300 an ounce, so despite having its recent pullback, it has struck another little rally and is back above $1,300 an ounce. Silver also settled at about $15.50 an ounce for the day, so also a little comeback for silver as well. The 10-year Treasury, get this, now sits at 2.6%. That is a drop of nearly 1.5%. So you have to remember how bonds are traded. It's a inverse relationship. If there is a lot of demand for those bonds, meaning there's a lot of bids, a lot of buying, then that bids up the price of the bond and the yield goes down. And that's exactly what we had happen here. So when you have the Treasury market catching a bid like this, it's really starting to send a signal that people are looking for safety. It's a flight to safety. Yet if you continue to look at the markets, the stock markets, you still have them going up. Now, of course, the Dow was down 96 points, but that is back to Boeing. And I'm going to get to that in a little bit. But you have to pay attention to this, ladies and gentlemen, because this is you have to understand how capital flows. And everything that happens is transmitting information. It is sending a signal out there of how people are thinking and how they are responding to certain stimuli, whatever that might be. Whether that's more money printing from a central bank, whether that's some sort of fiscal policy that is now taking place in any country around the world, whether that's some sort of other geopolitical risk, whether it's the oil markets, whether it's gold and silver, whether people have a preference for stocks or bonds or currencies or real estate, you have to understand where money is flowing. And the way that you understand where money is flowing is in the price. If the prices of something is going up, well, that means there's more buyers than sellers in that particular market. So right now, we're looking at bonds. We're looking at U.S. Treasuries. And I don't want to get into all of it in all of the different bonds that are offered on this podcast. I just like to go over and give everybody a nice, quick, and dirty view of what happened for the day. If something more interesting is taking place, then I'm definitely going to do a show on that. But just to sort of kick the things off on the economic podcast, I'd like to give you guys a sense of what's going on the 10-year. And the 10-year is a good benchmark because it has to do with a lot of other rates that exist, mortgage rates and that type of stuff. So it's definitely an important yield to pay attention to. But when you see that much demand for Uncle Sam's debt, you have to ask yourself why. What's going on? Typically, it's viewed as a flight to safety. Okay, well, if you're flying to safety, what's going on? What are you nervous about? Now, that doesn't necessarily mean in this world, in this day and age, in this financial world of Oz, that stocks are going to decline. Typically, that's what that would mean. Because when you have those types of assets, if those are your two assets that you're looking at, if you're looking at stocks and bonds, and you want to make a move, you want to put it somewhere, because you can, let's just say, for the sake of example, you can put it in stocks, you can put it into bonds, or you can put it into cash. Okay, people are saying of those choices, in this instance, we want to catch a bid for treasuries. They caught a bid, they went up, the yield went down, it's suppressed, it's now at 2.6%. That's a big drop, okay? In a normal environment, your stock market would be selling off. You don't have to be panic mode by any sense, any stretch. But that's what one would anticipate. Now, what I would anticipate, again, I don't do the day-to-day stuff, but if you're just to get a, just so you have an understanding of what one would typically expect to maybe see, all else equal, no breaking news or anything else overnight, that you would think that you would see a little bit of a pullback in the stock market tomorrow. You would have thought you would have seen that today, but you didn't. I mean, it wasn't what it was on Monday, not even close, but still, you have a preference for an asset class. And when you have money that's going to safety assets, bonds, you typically don't see them more money flocking into a riskier asset, stocks. So you have to pay attention to these divergences because it's important. It's market signaling. Everything's a signal. And so much more now, it has to do with market psychology than it does maybe the fundamentals. And that's sometimes something I struggle with because I like to be analytical. I like to look at the numbers. I like to make a logical and rational case, an argument to myself, think about it, and then present that to you guys. And I think I do a fairly good job at doing that. The problem is we live in a land of Oz. We live in a world where markets get moved by the words of the few, not the many. And that's not how it's supposed to work. Whether that's a Federal Reserve chairman, whether that's a central bank president, whether that's the president of the United States tweeting something, markets move. It's not how it's supposed to be. You and I and 7 other billion people around the world are supposed to move markets and determine prices. That's how it's supposed to work. So when you're looking at the markets and if you're just looking for a quick snapshot of what's going on, look at bond prices, look at bond yields, and then look to see what happened in the stock market and see if they make sense. Are they both going up at the same time? Are they both going down? Are they inversely related? Bond prices go up, stock prices go down, or vice versa? You got to pay attention. You have to pay attention. That's what it's all about. And I try to do my best to give you guys that information. It's something to pay attention to because we'll see. One day is not a trend. One day by no means is a trend. But if this continues, if we start to see the 10-year Treasury yielding below 2.6, if we get into 2.5s and even the 2.4s, something's probably happening. The bond market, again, how I like to look at those guys is they're the adults in the room. The bond market is the adults in the room. Stock market, those are the crackheads. Those are the heroin addicts. They need their fix. They're itching. They're scratching. Come on, Jerome Powell, I need my fix. And that's what they got. And the market's rallied. We've had this story, this conversation many times before. I will keep you posted on this, but keep looking at it because there's a lot of information when more money is really starting to flow into Uncle Sam's pocket because people are worried. My question is, why are they worried all of a sudden? Because I've been telling you guys for a long time now, this economy is smoke and mirrors. It's a mirage. It is fake. It is a bubble. And all of the news that was worrying people back in the fourth quarter of 2018, which led to the decline of 20%, that news is now coming to light. It's coming to pass. And we have the markets back where they were then. So if you can explain that to me, please do. Now, of course, we know why that's happening, but it's not supposed to be that way. It's not supposed to be money printing to save the day and presidential tweets after he has his conversation or the Secretary of the Treasury has his conversation with the plunge protection team. Oh, everything's okay. You don't have to worry about a thing. I don't know. I think there's a lot of headwinds coming our way. Remember that list? 30 market risks of 2019. If you haven't checked out those podcasts, it was a short series, three or four episodes. Go back and check those things out. Refresh your mind. And then see what's taking place. And add to the list. Because there's no doubt that there's more than 30. There's no doubt that there's more than 30. The VIX was down another 4% today. And then if you look at the currency markets, might want to have paid attention a little bit to the pound today because, well, we had the Brexit news. Theresa May had her Brexit deal shot down once again for the second time in only a matter of a couple of months. So it was a defeat. I think that was to be expected. She tried hard, supposedly. I mean, she was in the air. She was traveling to her counterparts in the EU trying to strike a deal. She got something that they could agree on between her and the EU, but she did it at the last minute. Now, we're not surprised by this. We predicted this. We knew this was going to come down to the 11th hour, 59th minute, and it did. But when you do something like that, you don't give the members of the British Parliament, of the UK Parliament, enough time to digest what was going on, and you already have these politicians pretty much with their heels dug in. It's party lines, and that's how it came. That's how it was. It was 391 votes against to 242 votes for. But at least, I don't know if you want to say this is a silver lining for the Prime Minister, she was able to sort of shorten her deficit from 2 months ago. The deficit this time was 149 votes. Back in January, it was a difference of 230, which I believe was a historic defeat. So at least she sort of closed the gap on that, but it's a little too late now. So what's next for the UK Parliament and the British people? What's going to happen next? Well, now we have a no-deal Brexit vote that Parliament will be voting on tomorrow. So they will have the say if a no-deal Brexit is an option. And if they vote for it, meaning no deal is on the table, then come March 29th, which is the deadline, the quote-unquote official deadline, that's it. That's probably going to be what's it. You're done. They're leaving. That's what the people voted for back in 2016. They're gone. See you later. Send a postcard. If they vote against it, then there'll be another vote to see if Parliament wants to extend Article 50, which has to do with the March 29th deadline. So that could get pushed out indefinitely. And that goes back into that whole discussion that I really don't want to get back into with the EU and Jean-Claude Juncker saying, you know, there might not be a Brexit at all. That's not for him to say. The British people already spoke. They're leaving. That's it. But in the currency market, you had the pound that was up at $1.32 to the dollar. Now it's at 131, and it was a little bit below that at 130. Now, I know that might not sound like a lot to people, but if you pay attention to the currency markets, a 1 cent, a penny move in either direction is a big move. The currency market is highly liquid. It trades 24 hours a day, 5 days a week. One of the, if not the largest market in the world. It's very liquid. So to see big movements in volatility is not an everyday occurrence, especially in the major currencies like the British pound, the US dollar, the euro, Australian dollar, Canadian dollar, those types of currencies. Once you get into some of the peripheries, then you might see a little bit more volatility, but in the main currencies, you don't see that big of a drop. So I'll keep you posted on that. Obviously, if you're a currency trader, that might be very exciting to get involved with that type of volatility, but it's binary. Now everybody seems to think that a no-deal Brexit might be more likely. And if that happens, and then you have all of the fear-mongering on top of that, if it's the end of the world if there's a no-deal Brexit. If it's just a hard landing, a hard crash out, look out. It's going to be recession for as far as the eye can see. Now, I don't believe that to be the case. I think there'll be hardship. They might dip into a temporary recession from a technical standpoint. Will it be long-lived? I highly doubt it. But it would be, if it was to be long-lived, it would be long-lived because that was a catalyst. Again, back to that list of 30 things of the market risk for 2019, where it is a no-deal Brexit, and that actually serves as a catalyst, and you have the domino effect of so many other things starting to get knocked over. Then you could have a prolonged recession. But if it is just a standalone thing and there is no catalyst, no domino effect after the effect, after a hard Brexit, well then, I think they'll be just fine. Again, a little perspective, they survived World War I, they survived World War II, they survived a whole host of other things, political, geopolitical, they'll be fine. Is it going to be easy? No, it's not going to be easy. There's a lot of unknowns, and that's shame on them. They've had almost 3 years now to solve this problem, and they're at the 11th hour, 59th minute, and they didn't solve it. So shame on them. Now, I just hope that they don't put a second referendum to the people, because that would just be an insult and a smack in the face to the ideal of the democratic process. Now, as we look here right now, the Nikkei, the Japanese markets are down 275 points, or 1.3%, and the Hong Kong index is down 169 points, or 0.6%, and of course that is on the back of Brexit. That is most of that noise that is driving them down. Because remember, there was that big rally in those in the Asian markets yesterday, too, on the back of the American market. So, I mean, everybody just follows everybody around, hoping for good news, seeing if something can happen. If it's good, it's great. And if it's bad, well, it depends on the day. Maybe it's okay. Maybe it's terrible. All depends. I can't give you that type of guidance. We're just looking at it. We're just in the fun house together. Okay? But getting back to the Dow and it being down 96 points, one of the key components obviously has to do with Boeing. And Boeing continues to be in the news because of those plane crashes recently around their 737 MAX 8 aircraft. And you had China ground all of those planes. You've had Singapore do the same. I think Malaysia and the Philippines have done the same. You've now had the EU ground all of those 737 MAX 8s. And there's a lot of attention and calls for the same to happen in the United States. Boeing was down 6% or $24.60 today, and now it stands at $375 a share. And if you recall yesterday, I was telling you guys, just a couple weeks ago, it was trading at $440 a share. So quite the drop in the past couple of days. So I'll keep you posted on that. Clearly, if there is more bad news for Boeing, I mean, how much further could it go if planes get grounded in the U.S. and elsewhere? And I don't expect anything major coming out of the investigation from that downed aircraft in Ethiopia, simply because those investigations typically take months, if not years, to finally find out what happened. What happened? Was it mechanical error or was it pilot error? I'm not going to speculate. That's for the authorities to come to a conclusion to. I just hope they keep everybody safe and we can learn from this, because clearly any type of accident, especially these things, are very tragic. And I mean, you're 30,000 feet in the air. You're at the pilot's mercy. You're at the plane's mercy, that you're hoping that it works. And it's a very safe way to travel, obviously. We pay attention to these types of things because they are so rare, and thank God these types of incidents are rare. But you also always want to side on the side of caution. So there are calls for the planes to be grounded here in the U.S. We'll see if that takes place tomorrow, and then subsequently what might happen with the price of Boeing. And then moving on, I just want to follow up with some other things in dealing with the Three Stooges that were on 60 Minutes. And of course, again, I don't mean Mo, Larry, and Curly. I mean Jerome Powell, Janet Yellen, and Ben Bernanke of the Federal Reserve. I've been thinking about this. I really want to know why they were on there. Why were they on 60 Minutes? What's going on? Because typically you don't have Federal Reserve chairman, current and former, giving really any type of interview. Now, I know that since Ben Bernanke was the chairman back in the 08-09 crisis and forward on, especially because he came up with quantitative easing, which has just been screwing the average American for the past 10 years, he wanted to sort of open the doors, shed a little bit more light on what goes on at the Federal Reserve. Who are they? What do they do? And why are you doing what you're doing now? And for how much longer are you going to continue on this path of quantitative easing? Well, it was for his entire tenure, and it was pretty much for the entire tenure of Janet Yellen as well. Just keep printing money. Just keep printing money. The markets throw a hissy fit? Give them their fix. Give them their crack. Give them their heroin hit. And that's what they've done. And that's what they continue to do. Then you had Jerome Powell, who was all out there trying to stop it, trying to go the other way, saying, all right, enough's enough. The economy's strong. It's better. It's on a solid footing. Obviously, the president thinks this is the best economy ever. Therefore, we can start removing the crutches, which are low interest rates and funny money. We can start tightening the balance sheet. We can start raising interest rates, and everything will be just fine because the economy's great. It's solid. Well, it turns out it wasn't. Turns out it isn't, and turns out the market didn't like it. You had a 10% drop, a 20% drop, and then you have the rush to do a policy 180, and everything's fine. And now they're on 60 Minutes. Ben Bernanke was on 60 Minutes some years ago, but that was it. I don't believe Janet Yellen ever gave a standalone interview to 60 Minutes. So it's not like this is common practice for 60 Minutes or really any major news organization or news program to do an annual or biannual interview with the Federal Reserve chairman. It's just not commonplace. So One, I guess, could argue, well, they're just trying to be more transparent. Transparent about what? Because their communication has been terrible. You don't just all of a sudden do a policy 180 if everything you're saying has been true. Well, it wasn't true. They had bad analysis. Their communication was terrible. It remains terrible. Are they trying to get ahead of something? Because typically, when you have these guys give interviews, they always tell you everything's fine. I mean, you can go find footage on the internet of Ben Bernanke back in 07, 08, being asked, is there a real estate bubble? Is there a problem in the real estate market? And what did he say? No, there's no problem here. So what good is listening to these people? Unless you want to know what not to do, just do the opposite. Everything's fine. Wink, wink. No, it isn't. Run for the hills. I mean, is that why we saw a flight to safety? Are market participants saying, you know, are they asking the same thing? Are they scratching their heads wondering why the Federal Reserve? And it was all three of them, not just the chairman, all three of them, all three former chairmen and the present chairman. What's going on? Because if everything was fine, typically they wouldn't have to come out to say everything's fine. You get what I'm saying? You got to read between the lines. Things typically don't just happen. You don't just have these types of interviews on a major news program like 60 Minutes. And of course, again, the questions were all softball. There was nothing real serious, nothing very pressing as to what was going on. But that's what I was sort of wondering for a little bit throughout the day. Why were they on there? What are they trying to do? I don't know. But you have to pay attention to these people because they move markets. They just move them. I mean, today it wasn't that big of a move, but that's the stock market. The bond market moved. I mean, do they want low interest rates again? I mean, you have a president in the White House who just put out $4.75 trillion budget with trillion-dollar deficits for at least the next 4 years, and I know for a fact it's going to be a lot more than that and a lot longer than that. So how are you going to pay for it? How are we going to pay for it? Well, it's going to have to be with funny money. It's going to have to be with lower interest rates. Now, the Fed meets this month. What are they going to do? Are they going to decide to keep wait-and-see policy? Because that's pretty much the signal Chairman Powell gave during the 60-minute interview, that we are in a wait-and-see period right now. And that means exactly what it sounds like. We're going to wait for further data to come in, and we are going to see what it tells us. If it's good, then we might be more inclined to say, okay, we might raise rates, or we'll hold out a little bit longer. If it's poor, if it's bad economic news, if it's scary economic news, well, maybe we'd be more inclined to cut, or at least stop the quantitative tightening, which has to do with their balance sheet runoff. Your guess is as good as mine. We live in a world of financial Oz. That's where we are. It's very difficult for people to manage money in this type of scenario. It's very difficult. You have the quote-unquote bond king, the former bond king, Bill Gross of PIMCO fame, a great bond investor. He's retiring. And what were some of his words of wisdom as he was departing? Basically saying it's a lot more difficult to make the type of returns that he used to make. Now, that's for a couple of reasons. You have technological advancement, which means there's more people that have more access to information at the same time. So it becomes more competitive. And so you're going to have more difficulties making those types of returns as opposed to what he did 30, 40 years ago. You also have this environment where you have the Federal Reserve and other central banks in so much control of the markets, it's very difficult to know what they're going to do, because if they can come out and change their minds like it's nothing, you just can't predict that. And when you have those types of wild swings, when you have a 10 and 20% drop off in 1 month, and then you have a V-shaped recovery, basically getting it all back in a couple of months, you just can't prepare for that. You can be diversified, But if you're somebody who's trading, I mean, you're going to lose your rear end. It just becomes very, very difficult. And when you have a few people moving markets, you don't have a market. So that's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. The Three Stooges are at it. Boeing is driving this market down. Who's going to be the next man up to keep the, be the catalyst to keep this thing going? Because President Trump says up, 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 and away. And of course, I say the other way. We'll see who turns out to be right. Thank you so much for joining me. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out. Leave your comments. I would love to hear from you. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Kuraitis. Godspeed.